Analysis by analysis. That's what you get from the other guys. But not here. Not now. Not ever. This is the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. A deep look inside the game. The Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA is broadcasting live from McFadden's at the ballpark and is brought to you in part by SEPTA, BCWSA, Rob's Automotive, Vince Sirianni and Contour Mortgage, Marriott Suites in Clearwater Beach, Harris Comfort, Penn Community Bank, McCaffrey Supermarkets, Peruzzi Auto Group, Keenan's in North Wildwood, and the Southern Ocean County Chamber of Commerce. We now go live to McFadden's at the ballpark for the Baseball Insider Show. Now, here are your hosts, Tommy Green and John Brazier.
All right, welcome to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA. I'm John Brazier, director of fun and games, the Fightin' Phils, and joined by my co-host, Tommy Green. How you doing, Tita?
They got it right this time. They said they made sure they got my name, you know.
Well, that's two in a row.
Yeah, I know. They're hot. They're, you know. You know,
and I think that we won last Sunday because of that.
Yeah, I think so.
So now we're going to win today.
Well, hopefully it's a sign of things to come a little bit.
You know? All right.
Everything's getting on a consistent side of things, and that's what we need, and that's what they need.
I like it. All right, well, Tom, we got a great show planned for today at McFadden's. For the Phils take on the Reds at 135, it is the rubber match. I think we haven't lost home series to the Reds since 2006, so hopefully we can continue that trend.
Yes, we need to keep that positive mojo because we do need it.
Yes, you know, we do.
I mean, because we're not real good in the last eight series, so to speak.
Well, Pete McCann had a meeting last night and it seemed to do well. So we'll see. We're going to have several guests on today. In fact, yeah. Todd Zlecki can talk about the team in general and talk about Pete McCann's meeting. Can talk about some of the players at Dubel Herrera and Franco and bullpen and kind of get into real details. Also, yesterday, the Phillies family, the baseball family, really a lot of families, lost a great one yesterday.
Yes, sir.
Jim Bunning. And I'm sure you had a chance many times because Jim Bunning came to Alumni Weekend.
Every Alumni year. Weekend since I can remember, he's been here. And him and his wonderful wife and got a chance to meet one of the greats and pick his brain a little bit and find out, about life too. I mean, because he made the jump to the U.S. Senate and run for that, and I mean, he's just done so many wonderful things in his life, and to be able to sit down and hold a conversation with him was pretty good.
I mean, what a career! As you said, he was one of the greatest pitchers of all time. Was in the Hall of Fame.
Oh yeah,
threw a no-hitter. Every Phillies fan will remember that 1964
in both leagues
on Father's Day. Did it on both leagues. Was the first All-Star to be an All-Star in both leagues.
Yes.
And I believe when he retired, he was second in strikeouts at the time.
At one time, yes.
And there you go. Then he goes on to the state senate. He goes on to be a congressman. Goes on to be a U.S. senator. Just what a life.
Yeah, I mean, so. It is, and what a wonderful man he was. I mean, it's we always like to talk ball every time we got around. And he's always wanting to get all those guys back together, so to speak. You know, they say, let's talk to the Phillies, see if we can get the no-hit guys back together all in one place.
Right, that's right. You are in that club.
And I've mentioned that a couple times to people, but it never come to fruition, so to speak, while everybody was still living, and now we're missing one.
All right, now let me ask a question. If you all got together, remember there was a couple of them that were like five guys involved. So do you bring all five guys back?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, if they're part of the game, I think you should.
Well, yeah, because one person just can't be credited for the no-hitter.
Because I remember the last big thing they really did as far as no-hit-wise, and they might have done a little something different now, I think. I've seen a poster out there. I remember where they had Bunning and Wise and Mulholland and me. That was the four at one time, and now we've had, obviously Millwood and Holiday and Hamels and combined no-hitter type. With those guys, and I think it's a good thing. You can do a lot of good things for charity, and raise money. If everybody's willing to come, and sometimes it's hard to get guys all in the same place.
Well, we're going to have Chris Wheeler on. Chris Wheeler obviously knows Jim Bunning. If anybody, he's basically our baseball historian.
Yes.
So if anybody can tell us stories about
Wheels,
Jim Bunning,
Wheels just got it. That's
Wheels got it. So we're going to we'll talk some Phillies baseball. Wheels. Tom, we're going to go around and look at the Phillies minor league system. I tell you what, there's a couple guys that are just in fuego, Nick Williams being one of them.
Yeah.
Nick Williams is a guy we got in the Hamels trade, and he's the last three or four games. Wait to hear some of the numbers. The other one that we continue to talk about, we've talked about him since spring training, but another guy that's on a complete roll is Scott Kingery. And then one guy who's been consistent the whole time is Rhys Hoskins. We'll talk about those guys.
Yes.
We'll talk about some of the pitchers. There's a couple guys in AAA in the bullpen. We'll talk about Hobie Milner. We're going to talk about Pedro Bieto. Pat Venditti, our favorite amphibious pitcher.
You got to go watch him pitch underwater, man. It's great.
Exactly right. And then we'll also, in AA, they have some great relievers down there. So, you know, there's help on the way. And we'll talk about the bullpen now because the bullpen has been on fire for the last 2 weeks.
So hey, leave the mojo alone. You know,
right.
Like I said, we
got to
leave that, let that dog sleep.
Yep. So we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about mostly with Zalecki. We'll talk about the current roster, see what he thinks changes and what can be made for the short term and the long term. And as always, we'll go around baseball. I'll bring you some unique stats and stories and lists and quizzes from around the league. And we will preview today's game at 1:35 versus the Reds. It is a day game, so the Reds, thankfully, they have Billy Hamilton out of the lineup. He's a little pain in the butt.
I tell you what. I mean, it shows you what part of the game is missing, say to speak, in baseball. When, you know, the first at bat of the game yesterday, we're looking for him to bunt, and he still bunts and still beats it out because he puts down a good bunt. It's a lost art these days. But I tell you what, it's exciting to watch somebody like that play because he can cause havoc, say to speak, for teams.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, exactly right. We also we're facing Scott Feldman, who is the starting pitcher on opening day against us. So we will see how we do on that.
We need Kendrick back for him because he's hitting like 470 off of him.
Yeah,
we need him back.
He's not back because he played at AAA last night. All right, Tommy, let's get through the week in baseball. But mostly let's talk about last night, or yesterday I should say, 4-5 start. You were at the game, right?
Yes, I was here.
You were up at the rooftop?
Oh, yeah. So it was a good view, man. I've never watched a game.
You never watched it up there?
Were
you
no, it was awesome. Weather was beautiful.
Were you at a tabletop or were you up in the bleachers?
Tabletop. Yeah, okay. We had a little function going on up there with one of the I think with one of your corporate clients.
Okay.
So we had some people up there, and you know, it was a good time. It was meeting a lot of good people, and getting a chance to watch the game up there was great.
Nice. Well, we faced Bronson Arroyo. Now, Bronson Arroyo has been around for a long time.
Yes.
I actually met him a couple years ago.
Pretty
down
cool
in the field.
Dude. Talented
great
guy.
Great guy, yeah. And he's a
music oriented.
That's
right up your alley.
That's right up my alley. Well, first of all, yesterday was a tough loss. Not only Jim Bunning, but I think you know I'm a huge Allman Brothers fan.
Oh, yes.
And Greg
Allman.
Yeah. So. It was a tough one. Also, unfortunately, 20 years ago, my father passed away on Saturday of Memorial Day. So,
man,
you got to be careful on Saturday of Memorial Day.
Yeah, really.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So yesterday's game gets off to a bad start. Literally within 2 minutes, fighting Phils are down 2-0. Right.
I tell you what. I mean, we just touched on it with Billy Hamilton bunting like that.
Right.
I mean, he bunts and gets on. I mean, you want to force him to get a hit. I mean, use the bat. You want to attack the zone with him because you're putting him on base is like almost like him hitting a triple.
Right.
It's almost like that.
The pitcher's brain has to start thinking about that. You know, who's on first,
and then what's on second,
and
I don't know who's on third. And that's what happens. You make a pitcher think, and a lot of things, bad things, can happen.
Well, then you get Zach Cozart, who's one of the best unknown players in baseball. Just certainly this year, he's just been really
owned us yesterday,
and hits a home run. So again, we're down 2-0. Phils claw back. We get a leadoff home run by Cesar.
How about that? How about him showing some increased power this year, so to speak? He looked a little stronger coming into the season this year. So
he did. So it was his fourth career leadoff home run, third of the season, actually. Last one wasn't until April 16th versus Washington. So he snapped a streak of 107 consecutive at-bats without a home run. So he hadn't had a home run since 426.
Yeah.
And maybe this is going to be a little.
I'd like to see him get going a little bit because he kind of, you know, has been sliding down the hill a little bit.
Right.
And then now we want to get him back on a positive manner, get him on base, and may hopefully cause some havoc a little bit because he's got speed to do things with too and challenge some guys.
Well, and then we go, then Michael Saunders in the second inning ties the game. So it wasn't too long before we tied it up.
Mm-hmm.
He's got 5 home runs in his last 23 games in May. In fact, he only had 1 home run in 23 April games.
Oh.
So maybe Saunders heating up too.
I tell you what, that was a bomb. He hit family of 4 in the second deck. Might have watched out. He might have got knocked out of it when that ball was hit so far up there.
There's our man Wheels right here.
Our man Wheels in the house. Good to see. And he's looking dapper Danish too.
You know, and we also have Todd's like, let's see if we have a you don't have a second headphone, do you, Chris? That's okay. Don't worry about it. All right, well, let's go back to the game. We'll We'll go back to the game. We'll bring on Wheels right now. Chris Wheeler, how you doing?
Good, Brace.
Let's get a mic up on Wheels.
We got to get a mic.
There we go.
There it is.
I'm good. Good to see you, Greeny. Anytime.
No.
Well, we were just talking about last night's game, but or yesterday's game. But we are going to switch gears because we talked in our intro that as you really are the, I would say you and Larry Schenck are the two best baseball historians for the Fighting Phils.
They've seen it all.
It's because we're the two oldest.
but you guys also have great memories. You've written books.
Yeah.
You know, and as someone who's got to know Jim as a player and as a in his post career, I mean, what a wonderful legacy the guy had. I mean, and people forget. I mean, obviously he's in the Hall of Fame and his jersey's retired here in the Phillies. But when he left baseball, he left as the leader in
17-year career, wasn't it?
Second in strikeouts, right? When he left.
Well, Robin Roberts is our all-time greatest right-handed pitcher, obviously,
right.
and then Buns, Jim, I called him Buns. That was the nickname we were allowed to call him before he was a senator.
Right,
and Jim was a number two right-hander. Obviously, lefty is number one left-hander, but yeah, Jim Bunning had an unbelievable career in the American League before he even got over here.
Right.
Pitched a no-hitter with the Tigers, and you know, one of my heroes when I was a kid, and the perfect game on Father's Day in '64 at Shea Stadium. And I just loved Jim as a player, and then I got to know him as a person. You know how that goes.
Right.
You know, when you're lucky, sometimes they don't live up to your expectations when you meet a player that you idolize. I don't have to say any more than that.
Yeah.
He did, and more. And I got to work with him in Dream Week one year. You know, he and I had the same team we worked on. He would go back at lunchtime and make phone calls because it was the first year he was running for Congress. So he had to make calls to get money.
Wow.
And I would hear him on the phone calling so-and-so and so in such a part of Kentucky saying, "Hi, I'm Jim Bunning. You know, I was a councilman, I pitched in the major leagues, and I'm running for U.S. congressman from whatever his district was there in Kentucky," because he lived in Fort Thomas, "and I'd like to have your support, and I hope I can get X amount of dollar that you would happen to send in." Because in those days, you couldn't do it online or anything like that. You had to do it on the phone and send it in the mail. So that's I can still hear him working the phones, and I think he was a six-term congressman, a two-term United States senator, too.
And he was a state senator, too, I believe.
And he was a city councilman at Fort Thomas, I believe. So and Jim was very involved with the Players Association. You know, people say to me, were you surprised he got into politics? Heck no, because he was very close with Marvin Miller and helped guys like Tommy become very successful as far as the union goes.
Yes, exactly.
Now, to talk about it as a pitcher. I mean, as we mentioned, when he left the game, he walked away with a lot of great stats. We were saying earlier that
yeah.
I think he was the first player to be an all-star in both leagues, right? He's the first one to throw a no-hitter in both leagues.
One of the fiercest competitors you'll ever see. Right-handed hitters did not like to hit off him because in those days, you know, he could be his ball ran.
His angle of attack.
All nasty from the right side.
Yeah, it was
tall,
dirty
and gangly and from down here. And, you know, you can look up everything.
He was a big man.
And he was 6'4", which is tall, you know, when you would come from the side like that. And he threw hard enough. He had a hard slider. And you'd have to look up the numbers, and maybe they'd prove me wrong. But Mays, Clemente, Aaron, the great right-handed hitters of our time back then, wanted no part of him. They didn't. Now, I'm not saying they didn't hit him. Yeah. Because they were such gamers, but they didn't want to hit off him.
That's like Kruk against Johnson and those guys.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
The
Candelaria, they had an effect on the left-handers like that.
And they knew that Jim was a little mean, too.
He
would hit you, and he would run the ball inside, too.
And he didn't care.
No, because back then you could do that stuff. Yeah. And then he could throw the slider away at will. And, boy, they would bail on him. So he was I use the term again, Brage, just a fierce, fierce competitor.
Where do you see, I mean, you kind of touched on it like that about pitchers pitching in like that, you know. Where do you see, what's the big issue today and yesterday? Why are they not doing that? Is it just because of the money they're making trying to protect these guys?
I think there's a lot of things involved. Number one is they don't know how to do it.
Okay.
Because they don't do it in the minor leagues.
My ball wanted to go in there.
Right, and you remember pitching with those dummies up.
Yeah.
You know, the things that they put in the bullpen, they put a whatever you would call a mannequin or something.
Yeah, there's something there. I mean, guys used to stand in there anyway and want you to come in there while you're warming up, you know, and want you to come in there because it helped us get it in there. And they could say, hey, get it in better. They wanted us to do it because we want to win, you know.
Well, they don't know how to do it nowadays. It's not part of the game. And guys, It's scarier to me nowadays because they don't know how to do it. And when they think they're supposed to, or they can hurt somebody. Yeah. And hitters don't know how to get out of the way. Watch how many hitters nowadays come right into the baseball. They were away.
Yeah.
Right. Now, some of them you can't get away. They chase you. There's nothing you can do about it.
They're finders, what we call them.
Well, you know what they just do? They're going to chase you. Especially if you throw it below the weight.
It's like sitting beside pods in the dugout. You know, there's no chance the ball's going to find you off the bat. It's going to, I mean, they're calling it finders, tracers, man.
That's true.
Well, I think on the hitting end that you're seeing more strikeouts than you've ever seen before. And so the philosophy of hitting, this goes into what we were just saying, philosophy of hitting, especially on 0-2 counts or just two strike counts, it used to be back in the day where guys would shorten up their swing, guys would choke up, and they'd protect the ball. Now, a lot of these guys are just swinging as if it's, you know, the count's 3-1. You know, it's a long swing knowing that, all right, if they miss it, because they're going for the power more.
And they dive, too, like crazy. Because
they know they're not coming in.
Exactly.
Right. I've bruised a lot of guys, because my ball wanted to go in there. You dive, you're going to get hit. Yeah.
And now they dive so much. And the other thing is, back when I first started, and you have to be very careful, and you know me, you don't want to sound like you're a fossil.
Yeah.
Because everything changes in every sport. And if you keep saying, well, it used to be this way and it was, who cares? Because it's not that way now and you move on. But the point is, back then, if a guy came out of his shoes and swung at those kind of guys like Bunning, and Drysdale, and Gibson. Look out on the next one.
Somebody was getting the spray and washed it clean off his back. You know?
It was coming at you. Right. And, of course, those guys, and Frank Robinson was another one, stood right on the plane, got hit all the time. It just made them madder. So they would get up. But trust me, you did not take the kind of swings you see nowadays. When guys' helmets are flying off and they're falling down in the box and all that, they would get loosened up.
One of the funniest stories I ever heard real quickly was I got the fortune to meet Jimmy Wynn, the toy cannon. And he was my hitting coach when I was over there with Houston, you know, in AAA. And he told me a story similar to that. And he said he was in St. Louis one day, and he was young. And he goes in the box, you know, up and guys dig in with their right foot. And they go in there, and they're digging their stance in there. And he looks at the catcher, and the catcher says, "What are you doing, digging your grave?" Mm-hmm. And he just happened to looks at the catcher, and he looks out on the mound. Who's out on the mound?
Gibson. Yeah.
He covers up the hole and puts the dirt back in it and gets in there, and he flips and put him on his back. Throws one right up underneath his chin.
That's a great story.
That's the way it was.
And Jimmy Wynn was a guy that took a big swing, too.
Oh, yeah, and he wasn't that big of a guy. No, you know, but he could get the head
power.
Out.
He had tremendous power, but he would take a big swing. But he wouldn't do it. There are certain guys you knew you just didn't do that stuff against.
Because you knew bad things were going to happen.
Right. You're not telling old wise tales about it. And it's like a guy like Jimmy Wynn and the catcher. And it was like, oh, no, that's Gibson. He asked Mike Schmidt when he hit his first home run off Gibby that time. He ran around the bases with his head down. They used to do that with Nolan Ryan. They would run around the bases with their head down.
And see how fast they could run around the bases.
Yeah, he didn't realize who hit it.
Well, that's why it's when Dallas passed away, and a lot of the stories were rehashed, and when Jimmy Pearsall, who was nuts, right? The guy was
he had papers.
Yes, his wheel was spinning, but the hamster's dead. He one time, hit the home run off Dallas Green, and he ran backwards around the bases. Dallas Green, remember how big he was?
Oh, my God. 100th home run. Jimmy Pearsall, and he had some emotional problems, to say the least, and Dallas was not happy. But Pearsall, they took him with a grain of salt because
they knew he was.
They knew.
As I said, he was a little unstable.
Well, good player, lightly.
Good player, but a little unstable, Greeny.
I played with a few of those guys.
Yeah, the whole 93 team.
Yeah, basically.
We got one of them around here a lot right now.
Exactly. I think I can count. On my count, there's four normal people on that team. Okay.
Stocker.
Tommy Green.
I was on that borderline.
You were.
Tommy Green, Kevin Stocker. Go ahead.
Morandini.
Mickey Morandini.
Jordan.
Jordan. All right. I forgot Ricky Jordan. I was going to say Jim Eisenreich.
And Izzy. Well, Izzy is like, hey, he was pretty cool. Right. He was a cool guy. Cool cat. He was a cool cat. And he loved being part of that team.
John Kruk called him Dahmer.
That's right.
So if you're calling Dahmer one of the normal guys,
he had some intense eyes.
Right.
Yes, he did.
Well, that was a tough team for me to break into in 1994, coming into that clubhouse with Jim Fregosi as a manager.
There was a couple times you walked out of that clubhouse with your tail between your legs.
It wasn't easy to be around when you'd been around 20 years.
Exactly.
Trust me.
Wheels had no chance. He walked through the clubhouse and he was fair game.
I like a lot of them a lot better now than I did then.
I say the same thing.
Not this guy.
Well, one of my favorite things before we let you go is, now everything's, the game's changed. We talk about baseball and they're not pitching inside. But now, with obviously, sabermetrics has become such a big part of baseball and stats and war plus and all these different numbers, ERA plus. Dave Hollins. And Dave Hollins might have been the most intimidating guy when I first started, and probably even if you're a teammate, right, or an opponent. Dave Hollins, there's a lot of people I avoided on that team, but, man, Dave Hollins was certainly probably at the top of that list.
Well, especially at the ballpark. You had to avoid him at the ballpark. Outside, he was fine.
Teammates avoided him.
Right. Well, now he's like the sweetest, nicest guy there is, nicest guy there is. So earlier this year, I go in to get some coffee up in the cubicle up in our offices. It's like 8:30 in the morning, and I walk in. And Dave is picking the brain of Louie. Louie's one of our sabermetrics guys.
Can you
imagine? Who's a Brown grad, big glasses, and he's well known.
Kind of geeky.
He's well known in the sabermetrics world. And you have Dave Hollins picking his brain.
I know. And
I'm sitting there like, if that was 24 years ago, he'd be eating Louie for breakfast. Yeah,
that's my point about not getting caught in the past,
right.
And getting lost. Came back and was scouting and doing stuff. It's still a joke, but he'd tell you it's true. He used to go around to people like a Scott Palmer, who was a media guy back then, and he'd say, "I'm sure I owe you an apology, don't I?" And he put his hand out.
That is so awesome. He's such a great guy. Wow. I mean, you had to know him. You had to know him to leave alone, but he's such a great guy.
If you ever had any problems, you certainly want him right beside you.
Oh, exactly right. Yeah,
him too. Right. This guy right here too.
But foxhole guy to the end.
No doubt about it.
Foxhole.
Yep. Well, Wills, again, sorry for your loss. Sorry for the Phillies' loss with Jim Bunning.
Thanks.
Thanks for really coming on the show and talking about Jim Bunning.
Okay.
All right, the great Chris Wheeler.
Okay.
All right, coming up the show.
Okay, Greeny.
We are going to talk with Todd Zielecki. You're listening to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA on 1490 WBCB.
Hey, this is Paul Stanley.
And this is Gene Simmons. And you're listening to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA, with Phillies Director of Fun and Games, John Brazier, and co-host Tommy Green. Am I getting paid for this? I am. The check cleared? All right. Then I love this show.
All right, we are back to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA, live from Fadden's. I'm John Brazier, joined by my co-host Tommy Green. We have Todd Zielecki, who got a big kick that Paul Stanley and
Gene
Simmons
did. That's amazing.
That's my favorite group, man.
Yeah. Huh?
That's my favorite all-time group. I grew up with those guys.
Were you a big Kiss fan?
You know, actually, I was not a huge Kiss fan. I appreciate some of their songs, but I never had like the Kiss lunchbox and.
Oh man, I grew up.
I don't have the Kiss coffin set up, for when I pass.
You never saw them in 3D like I did about 5 years ago.
No, I never saw them.
Big tongue coming right at you.
Never saw them in 3D. They are entertaining though. I have heard them do interviews, and they're fascinating guys.
Especially Gene Simmons.
Yeah,
he's got a screw loose. He's pretty cool though.
Yeah, I mean he has a reality show, doesn't he?
They know how to market themselves. That's
he
for
does.
Sure.
He does.
Yeah. Were you a fan of last year when we had Mini Kiss at the ballpark?
I saw Mini Kiss at the ballpark. That was exciting. That was a thrill. That was a huge thrill.
I mean, the best part is they didn't play any instruments. They faked. They didn't sing.
Yeah.
That was all dubbed.
That was money well spent.
Well, but I think people complain, oh my God, they didn't sing. They didn't play any instruments. I said, yeah, but we got five guys that are painted, dressed up as Kiss. Yeah, I don't care if they're faking or not. Whatever.
Right. It was pretty cool.
It's good entertainment. They played here at McFadden's.
It was a good photo op.
It was great. Great photo op.
Yeah.
All right. We got the great Todd Zielecki. Now, Todd, a lot of stuff going on with the Phillies. Obviously, there was a meeting after the game 2 days ago.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Pete McCannon, and I heard it. Now, you obviously weren't in the meeting.
Right.
But I'm sure you've kind of heard some rumblings that I think Pete kind of laid the law down.
He did.
And it seemed to help, I guess.
Yeah, it seemed.
Who knows? One game, but.
Yeah, it's one game, but I think he's been pretty patient and pretty calm with these guys all season long. And I think Friday was such a bad game that, he finally kind of needed to. to take the guys to school a little bit, or, you know, break out the ruler and slap them on the wrist a little bit.
There's nothing better than that sometimes to get your attention, like, you know, to break the status quo.
Yeah.
Know?
But you can't do it too much. You've got to pick
your
time.
You can't do it too much where, like, players are like, oh, my gosh, he's going nuts on us again, right. You know. But if he picked the right spots, it maybe has a little bit more of an impact. I mean, I remember Charlie Manuel did it when the Phillies had really good teams. He'd kind of – the team would go in through – be in a rut, and he would just – blow up on the team every once in a while and kind of individually call out guys, and it seemed to help. And we'll see if it helps long term with this team. But I think even if it doesn't, he needed to remind these guys that nobody's locked into long term deals here.
Right. And you that's guys, the thing. They're pushing. They got people pushing.
Yeah, people are pushing you for jobs. So, you know, keep playing like this and you'll be back in AAA. So you better pick it up.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I look at. I mean, some of the best times, some of those talks like that can get your attention. And not that Jimmy did it a lot when I played. You know, old Mad Dog did it. Lee Thomas. Lee Thomas would come down. He didn't like what he was seeing or hearing or how we were conducting our business, especially if we were losing and the way we were acting around the clubhouse and stuff like that and what we were doing. He was one of those that get your attention, you know, quick. And that's on the GM side. I mean, he come down and laid the law, you know.
Yeah, Lee Thomas, I don't know if I told you this story. Speaking of Rock, so I had, again, my first year was 94, so I think it was that year, a guy from WMMR, Rock Station, wanted to interview Lee Thomas, right? So Lee said, I'll do it. And Lee knew it was going to be a music guy. So he said, just, John, can you stay in my office while I do the interview, and just in case he asks me a question that I don't know. So I'm in his office, and I'm, you know, twiddling my thumbs while he's doing the interview. I can't hear, obviously, the DJ's questions. And towards the end of the interview's going great. Towards the end of the interview, I see a panicked look on Lee Thomas's face, and he holds a phone to his chest, and he says, John, give me a band. Give me a band. The guy must have asked Lee, who's your favorite band? And Lee wanted to sound like he's hip, right?
Right.
So I'm running around. Now I'm panicking because I got to come up with a band that, you know, is – so I run around and I lean into his – I whisper in his ear and I said, Pearl Jam. And Lee Thomas said, Matt, I'd have to say my favorite band is Pearl Jam.
Oh, my God.
And so I didn't – he looked at me. He's like thumbs up. And I gave him the thumbs up.
Yeah.
And I didn't tell him. I finally told him. I ran into him 2 years ago, and I told him that story. And I don't think he was happy.
It's like you're lucky he didn't drop you there.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Oh my God. So when did you – your first year was what year?
2003. April 2003 I started covering the Phillies.
Okay, so that was still
the Boa? Last year
that was still Boa.
So you started with Boa. Then you went from Boa to Charlie.
Yes. Wow, how was that?
That was quite the change. That was quite the change.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, Boa post-game and pre-game, depending on what mood he was in, he would give a lot of one-word answers. He was really tough to crack. But he was also entertaining to cover – because he got so emotional, and he was such a really smart base. He still is a smart baseball guy.
One of the brightest, yeah.
Yeah, super smart baseball guy. And then Charlie, of course, was a lot more laid back and would joke around with you a lot more. Two totally different guys. I almost wish I could cover Boa again with more experience under my, you know, having more experience, just because I feel like he was so intimidating almost as somebody new covering baseball.
Like a Brillo pad.
I feel like, yeah, right. I feel like Boa is the type of guy that, you know, he can give it to you. He'll give it to you, but he likes having it given back to him a little bit. And I think when I was so young and so inexperienced, I didn't do that as much. I think now would be a lot more fun to cover.
Yeah,
for sure.
How about some of the players over the years that you've worked with? Some of your favorite players, just from either getting quotes or just because they're easy to work with or fun to work with.
Yeah, you know, my favorite player of all time to cover. He was only here for 1 year, and it was a guy a couple of years ago. Is Jeff Francoeur. I love calling
Frenchie's the best.
Frenchie's
awesome. And you know, a lot of people kind of poo-poo the whole clubhouse chemistry thing, and you know, the clubhouse chemistry doesn't matter. Or team leader, they downplay team leaders, which I think is ridiculous. Jeff Francoeur to me was the best guy I've ever seen in a clubhouse because, you know, people, there's kind of clicks. You have click here, click here, click here. Jeff Francoeur was one of the only players I've ever seen. He would get, you know, everybody, no matter what their background is, where they came from, he got everybody involved. He really, he went from one click to the other click, and he was just tremendous in terms of that. And he was just a great guy. He would see you and ask you how you are. You know, some players, they don't really want to talk to the reporters, which I totally get and I don't have a problem with, but he really treated you like a human being.
Yeah.
And again, he just an everybody, clubby, reporter, whomever it was, he was just tremendous. He was my favorite guy for
Who's
sure.
Who's that remind you of back in the day? A little bit as he's talking. You got Frenchie.
Dutch?
Frenchie and Dutch. Dutch had, yep. They had a lot of the same qualities, I think.
Yeah, you know,
Dutch wasn't, we had their cliques too, say to speak, but he was that one that, yeah.
And Frenchie's now, he just got hired as a broadcast. Fox 1 broadcaster, right, for the Braves.
I'm sure he'll be a great broadcaster. Yeah.
He's one of the ones that just universally loved. He'd talk to anybody. I took him out to through a friend, golf at Marion, and there was a rain started pouring down, so a lot of people went running to this kind of shelter. And so there was probably about 50 guys kind of sitting around, and people started recognizing Frenchie. Now, there are some players that would want to shy away and kind of hang with their foursome or, kind of just stay private. He approached them and said, "Hey, guys, I'm Jeff Frank Gore." And next thing you know, he's holding court with 40 guys that are hanging on every word.
He tells great stories, too.
Right.
He's told some great stories.
Well, he's been around. So, that's why it's so amazing. He's got the chance to say to speak. He's played in different organizations, met a lot of different people, and that's what's so good about it. When you do get outside of one organization.
Those guys are so valuable, and again, like I said earlier, I think a lot of people that aren't in a clubhouse, they kind of downplay the importance of a team leader or what do you need clubhouse chemistry for. I think those guys are just so hugely important. Like I said, a couple years ago, he told Mike Alfranco, he's like, "If you hit 15 home runs before the end of the season, I'll buy you a new suit." I mean, it's like those little things that you do to a player, and maybe they carry it on to the next generation of ball player. You tell them how to act, how to behave in a clubhouse, how to behave after a win, how to behave after a loss. And I think, I personally think they could use a guy like that right now even.
Now, let me switch gears here just a little bit before we go to break. The social media aspect of your job, because before when you first started, you're
zero,
right? So now I see a lot of times that you were obviously very active on social media. It's at Todd Zlecki.
Yes, at Todd Zlecki on Twitter. Yeah.
So sometimes you're forced, or I don't know if you're forced, but you might yourself feel compelled to respond back to somebody.
Right.
So in an instance where somebody says, when Odubel Herrera had the platinum sombrero,
right.
Pete McCann the next day, instead of benching him, which a lot of fans would say you should do, Pete actually put him in a more prominent role.
Right.
Put him up higher in the lineup.
Right.
And sometimes when people respond back, if you're making an analysis of why Pete did it,
right,
people can respond back in a negative way and say you're an idiot, blah blah. How do you pick and choose when you're going to jump in the fray? And
it's kind of a feel thing. If someone like is super personal, I'll try to just to ignore them. But if they say that this is that terrible, that's a stupid decision, I can't believe it, I'll try to explain it to them as much as possible. Sometimes I get sucked into the vortex and I'll just oh my gosh, I've been replying to this person like 5 times in the last hour. What am I doing? Because they clearly don't, they're clearly just set in their way that, this guy should be sent to the minor leagues or cut or released or traded, blah, 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 blah. So I try to respond as much as I can and be as respectful as I can, but then sometimes somebody will just go super personal, like, all right. what you can do on Twitter, I try not to block people, but what I do now on Twitter is they have a mute option. So they will literally, you can mute them on Twitter, and they'll think that you're tweets, but you're not seeing their tweets anymore. So they're kind of just responding to you.
To thin air,
yeah. They're just
like, this guy, Zlecki, won't respond back to me.
I'm sure there's so many people.
He's already blocked you, pal.
Yeah, exactly.
He muted you.
So many people are telling me, I'm sure, that I'm a massive moron, but I just never see it. So it's like bliss. Ignorance is bliss almost.
You wish you could do that almost in real life. Just put the mute button on somebody.
Oh man!
Right? I'm sure you.
This carrot in your
pocket. I'm sure back in '93, you probably would have loved to do that to Shill, huh? Put the mute button on him.
And Crunky would have told you you'd love to do it to me because I love to talk too, man. But I mean, hey, it is what it is.
Right.
And Crunky's probably worse than all of us. Listen at him.
Exactly.
All right. Before we let you go, just are you seeing progress? From a short-term point of view, and what is this season? What would be a successful season? I know obviously wins and losses aren't as big this year, but what would be a successful season?
I think a successful season for this team would be to see some more of these young guys turn things around the last 4 months of the season and have a greater body of work of 2 or 3 years, so that the front office going into this offseason can say, okay, we think we have something in Aaron Altherr or Herrera. bounce back, and he had ended up having a pretty decent season. You know, Eichhoff turned it around, and he had another 200 inning type of season. Just enough guys to have a base. So going into, like I said, going into this offseason, they go, okay, we know probably in the next 2 years we're going to need to add a player here and a player here and a player here so we can focus our efforts in that regard.
Yeah.
Don't worry so much about the wins and losses. The team wasn't supposed to win a lot of games anyway. If you looked at a lot of the projections before the season started, a lot of people thought 70, 71 wins. They could still get there or even be a little bit better. So I'm not in a panic mode like some fans are.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't supposed to be a 500 team. They weren't supposed to be a wild card team.
They're not supposed to, but
great.
You would love it. But
yeah,
I mean, if they do what they can, or say to speak, capable of
right.
doing.
They, yeah. But it's not a time to panic and call up tons of prospects. Let those guys continue to play well down in the minor leagues, gain some more experience down there. They'll be up later this season, but May 27th, what's the date today? Now is not the time to
right. yeah, it's early.
Call up a bunch of prospects and then have them flail.
Just for the sake
of
change.
I was talking to somebody yesterday whose opinion I really respect, and he said, you don't want to call up these guys too early, blow out their confidence, and now you lose all these great prospects because
right.
you brought them up at the wrong time, and now they have no chance of success
yeah,
in the big
exactly.
league.
Yeah, for every guy that works, you know what I mean?
Like, Dominic Brown, everybody. Dominic right. Brown was to me is a poster child of this. They brought him up before he was ready. They sent him down. They brought him up. They sent him down. They brought him up. Now he's toiling in the minor leagues somewhere. I think
right.
I don't even know if he's in baseball anymore.
Right.
I think he's in the minor leagues in the Rockies system maybe, and not playing well.
Well, I mean, the thing is, people talk about, you know, they ask me all the time about different things like that. And I say, well, these guys, they got to give the guys here a chance to play. They got to go. They're going to take their lumps. You're going to fail. But what you want to see as a young guy is have some success, a little success that starts breeding that confidence
yep.
a little bit, and they start getting a little bit more consistent in the right manner. They don't mean we have to go out and we got five all-stars in the rotation. You know what
right.
I mean? It's not going to happen. But as long as you see steady progress and them not reverting back to what, say to speak, they used to be that, you know, a little bit. And
yep.
I mean, that's what you're looking for, that steady little step up, rather than less than two steps forward, three steps back type thing.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, Tyler, I know you got to get back to work.
No
so
problem.
We'll let you go. The great Todd Zlecki. Thanks for coming
thanks.
On.
Appreciate it. Thank
All
you.
Right.
Thank
coming
you,
up on the show, Tommy you. Green is going to tell a tremendous story about, he mentioned Johnny Padres earlier. You're going to tell what I found a very entertaining story about Johnny Padres. We'll also get into some stats and stories around baseball. You're listening to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA on 1490 WBCB. We are live from McFadden's.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Paralysis by analysis. That is what you get from the other baseball guys. But this is the Baseball Insider Show. Presented by SEPTA with Phillies Director of Fun and Games, John Brazier, and co-host Tommy Green. Meet me at the tree in Mexico, bitch.
All right, we are back to the Baseball Insider Show. Presented by SEPTA live from McFadden's. That was Morgan Freeman. I'm John Brazier, joined by my co-host Tommy Green. Now, Tommy,
is so great, man.
with Chris Wheeler, we were talking about old school and the way
yeah.
players do different things and how stats are you know, recorded. But one of the stories you told recently on a radio station is something with an old school coach, Johnny Padres, about as old
yeah.
school as you can
with
get.
Old school.
Old school.
You talking about? I mean, I don't even know if Johnny wrote things, kept anything, you know, as far as charts or you know any type of numbers or anything. I mean, he was just as old. He was such a in your face type, Rob, to build
yeah, positive,
you up,
real positive, right?
Real positive, you know,
right.
you know, reinforcement. That's what he was. And
right. tell the story about the pitch count.
Well, it got in. I was on the radio the other day, and they started asking me about pitching coaches and pitch counts and stuff like that. And they asked me about pitch counts when I was there and when I played. And I said, you know, I said we really didn't. You know, really didn't have really too much of a pitch count. Fugosi's, you know, philosophy was my eyes tell me what I need to see. But what our pitching coach, Johnny Padres, did have, he had a clicker in his hand that, you know, say to speak, every time we threw a pitch, he'd click it, you know, that type of thing. And during the course of the games and stuff, you know, at some point Jimmy would ask, you know, Pods, how many's he got? And it all depended on how we were doing at that point of the game. If
right.
we were struggling or we were pitching well. If we were pitching well, it was always 10 to 15 pitches less than what we really had. So if we're at 100 pitches, oh, he's got 85, you know, that type thing. And if we were struggling, you know, laboring out there a little bit. It was always 10 to 15 more, you know. So when Jimmy asked him to see, Jimmy knew it, so say to speak. He was just wanted to hear what Pods had to say. And that's when Jimmy said, he said, my eyes tell me what I need to see. I know when you're struggling, your ball's up in the zone. But Pods was the best. He always tried to take care of his guys. And, I mean, and it comes in today. It's just like, I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not around this club as far as the day in and day out things to see the relationships, you know, like McClure has with his guys. But every pitch coach tries to take care of his guys, and I mean, if you can. You know.
We had my first year, 94, intimidated by everybody, even Johnny Padres. I didn't realize he looked like just like an old school baseball guy. So I assumed,
and he walks.
Yeah. So I remember we did a promotion out at one of the racetracks.
And, no, shocking to see him there, right?
Well, we had Boa, Fregosi, Vuk, and Padres that were all going to ride in a what do you call that? You know, in a chariot. But what do you call those races? I forget.
I don't.
Not chariot race, obviously. But
I know what you're talking about.
Steeple? No, I don't.
It's not.
Whatever. So they were all going to get, and then they had
a little cart pulled behind the horse. Yeah, I mean, they race them. You know,
right? Someone will come up with it. They had
like
a real
walkers
driver,
or something.
They had
like
a real driver in there, but each of these guys were competing against each other, four horse race.
Yeah.
But they'd be in the saddle with the guy or in the whatever the.
Oh yeah.
So I remember afterwards, they wanted to stick around and you know watch the real races, so. I said, I was trying to be helpful, and I said, hey, I'm going to go to the window. Does anybody want any bets? Well, I'm thinking, like, someone's going to ask for a, you know, 2-5 box exacta or something that I know, right? Johnny Padre. Johnny Padre, and they were signing autographs, so they couldn't go to the window themselves. So I went up to – I said, Johnny, can I take any bets for you? He's like, yeah. And he had that, you know, that raspy voice.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I want the 5-6-4-2 superfecta and the 1-2-3. Make sure it's the super parlay and this or that. I couldn't write fast enough, and next thing you know, I didn't want to have it wrong because if I go to the window and he wins and I put in the wrong order, you know, like so I made Todd Hacalis, Harry's son. I said, can you do me a favor? Can you go because Harry was in the horse and Todd knew the horse very well. I said, can you just go ask Johnny Padres what he again just so I don't
and so butcher
he,
it.
So he did it. It came back.
Harness racing.
Thank you. It came back, and I was completely wrong. So, like, thankfully, I got Todd involved. So, yeah.
That's not surprising to see Pods at a racetrack. He loved the horses, man. He loved to watch them things run.
As did Harry. Yeah. All right, let's go back to just we'll just talk about yesterday's game.
Okay.
Just a couple things. So, you know, we dropped out. It was 2-2. Tommy Joseph, had a huge home run that they took the lead in the fourth inning, and Tommy Joseph has just been
what a great month. I mean, he's gotten hot and doing the things like we thought he was capable of doing.
Well, in May he's hitting .321. He's got 7 home runs.
Yes,
and he's got 2 walk offs all in the last 3 days.
It'd be great if he could repeat this type of month, you know, all the time, wouldn't it?
He is the first Philly with 2 walk off hits in a 3-game span since Juan Samuel, who did it back in 1985. He's the first player to accomplish the feat since Sterling Castro in baseball since 2015.
Yeah.
So, he's
hot right now. He's seeing the ball pretty well.
He is. And I tell you what, too, speaking of hot, the bullpen. We talked about the bullpen earlier. The bullpen now has a 19 2/3 inning scoreless streak since May 23rd. It is their longest since a 20-inning scoreless streak back in 2016. In the last 9 games since May 19th, the bullpen has posted an 0.61 ERA, 2 earned run, 29 innings pitched. So it's
It could only get gotten better, you know, because it was low there at one time, say to speak. It was not a lot of confidence going around that end of the pitching staff, and then now, I mean, it's contagious a little bit. Guys get going a little bit, and they get challenged a little bit. I think that's what all happened. I mean, over the course of the season, you got your ebbs and flows. Now you don't want to see them get. You know, you're going to struggle some, but you don't want to see them struggle as heavily as they did at that one time. You
right.
know? You just want to maintain the balance, you know, a little bit more. But they're pitching great baseball now and pitching with a lot of confidence down there.
And the starters still aren't going deep.
No, that's the problem, you know. So
once they start doing that, hopefully it'll even, you know, the bullpen.
Numbers don't lie.
Right.
No, I mean, the staff ERA for our starters concerned is not real good. And we got to start going deeper and finding ways to get deeper in game. And that only comes if you're getting the job done.
Yeah.
But, you know, overall. You know, we've sort of struggled in that department.
Yeah, no, Eichhoff, you know, he went 5 1/3 yesterday. He gave up
8 hits,
3 earned runs. He battled 4 – had 89 pitches. But he has surrendered 3 earned runs or fewer in 21 of his 25 career starts at Citizens Bank Park. So he still doesn't have a win, but you know it's coming at some point.
Yeah.
You know, again, his ERA is not bad to where he's not getting.
Well, it takes one good game. I mean, as a starter, so to speak, when you don't have that many innings to kind of get it going to get your ERA back down. As a starter, because you go out there and throw up 6 innings scoreless or 7 innings scoreless, your ERA comes down a little bit. But it's hard for a reliever to get that ERA down, because if he gives up 3 runs or 4 runs in an outing, it takes a while because they're usually coming in maybe an inning or maybe a third of an inning or 2/3 of an inning, and they're out. You know, so it takes a while to get that down.
And another guy who's been on a tear is Aaron Altherr, who set up the winning run by getting on first base, wisely seeing the ball glance off the catcher, takes second, close play, and then he legs it out on the single by the walk-off by. So,
yeah.
You know, there are some positives.
Aggressive base running, being ready to run, anticipating a ball in the dirt, that type of thing.
Yep.
That's all good. Those are the intangibles you like to see in a young kid, be able to do that.
All right, coming up at the show, we were going to talk. We'll preview today's game. We will go around baseball, touch a little bit in the minor leagues. We have a short segment, so we'll do a rapid fire. You are listening to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA on 1490 WBCB.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Paralysis by analysis. That is what you get from the other baseball guys. But this is the Baseball Insider Show. Presented by SEPTA with Phillies Director of Fun and Games, John Brazier, and co-host Tommy Green. Meet me at the tree in Mexico, bitch.
All right, we are back to the Baseball Insider Show, presented by SEPTA, live from McFadden's. I'm John Brazier, joined by my co-host Tommy Green. And Tommy, we got the rubber game today. As I mentioned, the Reds have not won a series in Philadelphia since 2006.
We need to keep that trend going.
Need to keep it going. We got Zach Eflin on the mound.
We need to get him going.
0-2 with a 5.36 ERA in 7 starts. We are facing Scott Feldman, who we face on opening day. Phil's got the win. Remember, we won 4-3. He struggled early, so let's hope we can get to him early. The lineup is Hernandez, Herrera, Altherr, Joseph, Saunders, Franco, Knapp, Galvis, Eflin. All right, going through, and the Reds don't have Billy Hamilton, which is
That's a positive thing. I mean, right there, that guy wreaks havoc.
Yep. All right, Phil's minor leagues, we talked about that. How about this? They overall, in their 4 leagues, in AAA, AA, 2 single A's, 111-80.
Let's get
overall
done.
Record. The Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs have the best record in all of minor league baseball, 33-15, which is great. And as I mentioned, Hoskins continues to stay on a roll, hitting .327, 13 home runs. The key stat, 28 walks, 31 strikeouts for a big home run hitter.
He's getting it done. He's finding ways to get on base other than, say to speak, get with the hits and stuff, which is great. I mean, that's his maturity coming. I mean, the steps forward we talk about as a hitter, he's maturing into, I mean, a guy that knows the zone a little bit, and when he gets a pitch, he can do something with it.
Yeah, and another guy, Nick Williams, heating up. He's now up to .279, got off to a slow start. He has 8 home runs. How about this one? In his last 4 games, he has 7 hits, 3 home runs, a double, and 11 RBIs. So Nick Williams, again, who's part of that, was part of the Hamilton
trade. That team's on fuego down there.
Yeah, and in Reading, Scott Kingery hit a home run yesterday. He's got 15 home runs. And a guy that you can't forget about, Andrew Pullen, we talk about him every week, hitting .326 with 10 home runs.
People are pushing each other, man. Hey, and that's what's good about having a system like that. I mean, it's either going to break the best out of somebody, or they're going to go the other way. So, we'll find that out.
All right, just going around baseball real quick is how about Mike Trout? Mike Trout, he needs 28 hits for 1,000 in his career. He needs 16 home runs to reach 200, and he's 25 years old. Just in May alone, he has 19 hits, 5 doubles, 9 home runs. He's got a .489 on-base percentage. It's pretty crazy.
No, that guy's ridiculous.
All right, then the other one is like Clayton Kershaw. We might be looking at the greatest hitter in Mike Trout when it's all said and done. We might have seen the greatest hitter in baseball. And it's not hyperbole to say that we might be seeing the best pitcher ever. I mean, you look at Clayton Kershaw, he's unbelievable. I mean, you look at we talked about sabermetrics. They have this adjusted ERA. Adjusted ERA is a statistic that tries to create context to measure the people from different eras.
Yeah.
Right? Because they could say Pedro Martinez pitched against a steroid era, so maybe it should adjust
better for Pedro
because
he's pitching against guys. Or if it was Cy Young who's pitching the dead ball era, well, then that ERA needs to get adjusted because, you know, back then there wasn't a whole lot of power.
Yeah.
Well, right now we are in the age of power. And adjusted ERA right now, if Clayton Kershaw's career ended, he would have the highest ERA, adjusted ERA of any pitcher in baseball. He's got a career ERA of 2.35. He's second all-time in WHIP with a .996. I mean, he's led the NL in ERA for four consecutive years. I think he's had four Cy Youngs.
Yeah, I mean, it's you're witnessing a guy.
Unbelievable.
It's you know, comes around once in a while, and that type of thing. And we've been fortunate enough to see some pretty good pitchers. You look at some of the names you got that with Pedro too, the types of guy that can influence a team, you know, I mean a whole team, and change things around and carry guys, and that's what they do, and that's what Kershaw does.
And how about this one? The 79 of the 91 pitchers, so he's doing that, his strikeout to walk ratio 15.64, his strikeout to walk ratio. He had 100, this is last year, 172 strikes, strikeouts, 11 walks. Like, just
that's like
it
Maddox
done.
Back in the day.
Right.
You know, as walks wise.
A couple other weird stats. 79 of the 91 pitchers that qualify for the ERA title had an average velocity of 90 miles per hour or higher. There were 49 relief fastball velocity of 95 miles per hour or higher. And you know who's one of the best pitchers in baseball right now with a 1.81 ERA? Dallas Keuchel, and he ranks 88th out of 94 in terms of velocity.
Oh, yeah.
One last one, Joey Votto went all last year without popping out. What does he do on the first pitch on Friday night? He pops out. All right, Tommy, that wraps up today's Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA Live from McFadden's. I'd like to thank my co-host today, Tommy Green, our engineer today, Chris Ermer, WBCB Program Director Bob G. and Quinto, back in the studio, Brooke St. Ives and Rich King. Our guests today, Todd Zielecki, Chris Wheeler. Thanks to John Bernard and the good folks here at McFadden's. We will be back next Sunday at McFadden's before the Phillies take on the Giants at 1:35. Stay tuned for Phillies on Deck with Jim Jackson as the legendary Harry the K says,
we're out of here.
You've been listening to the Baseball Insider Show presented by SEPTA, an exclusive presentation of 1490 AM WBCB and heard round the world at WBCB1490.com.